Welcome to The Mindful Dog Parent, the podcast for overwhelmed and anxious dog owners who are doing their best but still feel like they're getting it all wrong. I'm Sian, a trauma-informed coach and ethical dog trainer. I created this podcast because dog parenting isn't always cute reels and perfect walks. Sometimes it's tears after training, guilt in the quiet moments, or just feeling like you're the only one struggling. If you've ever said, I love my dog, but this is really hard, you're in the right place. Each week, I'll bring you calm, compassionate guidance to help you build confidence, regulate your emotions, and reconnect with your dog, even when things feel messy. Because you're not failing, you're just overwhelmed, and you don't have to figure this out on your own. Every scroll gives you a new dog training tip. One person swears by treats, another says don't use them at all. One person says turn your dog to the left when they pull on the lead. Another person says completely stop where you are. Before you know it, you've got 10 different voices in your head and you're left wondering which, if any, is gonna actually work for your dog. Back in episode 7, we talked about what to do when those tips and tricks and hacks don't seem to work, and I set you a challenge to help you to make them stick a little bit more effectively. Now, that was a great starting point, so feel free to go back and revisit episode 7. If you haven't listened to it, you don't need to listen to that before you listen to this episode. You can listen to this, take all the things, and then go listen to episode 7. But it's a great starting point. But today, I want to go deeper because I think it's just so useful. And it's because it's not just about why things haven't worked before. It's about learning how to filter advice, cut through the noise, and finally choose a path that actually feels calmer and more sustainable for you and your dog. That is why we're going deeper, because it's such an important thing. I hear it a lot, and I get a sense of, in today's world, we don't listen to our gut, our instinct, what our bodies are telling us. We are listening more to those external voices than anything else. And I am testament to that, because I used to listen to what other people told me to do in business and in life and in training with my dog. And I'll kind of go into a little story about that when we get to that point. But I want to just go into it more because I think it's super important, and I have a really simple way to start to, like I say, cut through that noise and get back to a place where we're listening to ourselves, setting those boundaries and doing things that are supportive of us with our dogs. So I'm Sian, if you don't know me already. I am the host of the Mindful Dog Parent podcast, which is what you are listening to right now. And today we are going to be tackling training advice overload. So this can actually be, it doesn't have to be dog training advice, it can be in any aspects of our life as well. So I think it's a really useful tool, whether you use it with your dog or outside of life and training with your dog as well. So why, I'm going to go through why there is so much conflicting advice out there, how that confusion keeps you and your dog stuck where you are. We did touch on a little bit of it already, but I can go into a bit more around that one. I think it's useful to revisit and kind of dig deeper. And I want to work through the simple framework that you can use, and it's going to really help you to focus only, not only on what matters to you, but also to your dog. So your unique team, I want it to be something that works for you both. If you've ever felt like you're bouncing between methods, second guessing yourself, drowning in the do this, not that advice, I want you to first of all take a breath. It's going to help to ground you a little bit in the moment, and I want you to come at this podcast and what I'm going to kind of set as a challenge for you to do at the end of the podcast from a place of more regulation. And I also want you to know, as I always remind you, you're not failing. In this case, you're overloaded, and in this episode, we're going to untangle it all together. Now, I've been here myself with this scenario and this kind of stuff, so I'm going to give you some personal things as well as that framework to take away. So, first of all, why is there so much conflicting advice? So, I've talked about why there are so many tips and tricks and that kind of thing that might not be working, but the advice is conflicting as well. So you hear, like I said, people say they swear by treats, others say don't use them at all, and you get all this wash of information, regardless of what it is, in what context. There's always lots of different conflicting advice out there, and I hear it from clients every single day. So I'm going to go into the reasons why, and then we'll go into a little bit more about a story, and then we'll go into the framework on how to sort of untangle it all. So why it happens? The algorithm on social media rewards extremes. So the short clips are designed there to grab attention, to hook you in, not to give you context. And it just means that and the nuances around those dogs and what's happening, even when it's not dog training, gets lost. So the algorithm rewards extremes, which is the quick, short, you know, quick, I need to get it done ASAP, and this dog went from this to this in a minute. We get trapped by that, hooked in, we think it's possible, but again, there's no context around it. So when you don't know what you don't know, and you trust in what that video is telling you to do, it might be something that's actually going to cause more harm than good. The next thing is different dogs, different goals. So a confident adolescent collie needs something really different to a sensitive rescue who startles easily. So my dog Ollie is the latter of the two. A tip that's brilliant for one might actually fall flat for the other, because we're not thinking about the individual dog in front of us. We are taking a general tip and throwing it in to a situation that actually might need more information, context, background, behaviour, like what they've learned, like all the other things. That's why it's so nuanced. So if you kind of think those are the two extremes, we've got a confident adolescent collie working dog versus a rescue who's sensitive and startles easily. So I've kind of made it more obvious with the differences between the two there. Then the next thing is that methods reflect values. So trainers do hold different philosophies. We all have our kind of point where we are. So on a spectrum of kind of aversive to ethical. Some centre around relationship and regulation, which is where I sit, trying to build that relationship and regulation and the well-being of the dog in front of me, and making sure that we're meeting all of their needs in that way, and emotional kind of regulation, all that kind of stuff, versus some that prioritise compliance or speed over everything else. So they just say, I want the dog to do this, therefore this is what I'm going to do, and there's less of that specific stuff that I've gone through that's mentioned. If you follow three different value systems all at once, everything is going to feel muddy. So I'll kind of go into a bit more about that, and you'll see how that kind of plays a part when I give you a little metaphor that we can just kind of think about it in a bit more detail. And then the next one is cherry-picked success. So that one's a bit of a mouthful. So success that's been cherry-picked. You often see that final 15 seconds that's worked, again, because the algorithm's going to reward that short video. So they're filming the biggest change for the shortest amount of time, not the week of the foundations that's made it possible. So we kind of like see a very short snippet of something happening and working, but not how it's got to that point. And that short video is not allowing us to give that context around that change and the dog. So when you're going to be collecting tips without a framework, you end up with puzzle pieces from different boxes. So this is that metaphor that I was telling you about. Every single piece of that puzzle might be valid, but they don't make one picture, because you've taken one piece from this box, one piece from that box, another piece from this box. That's why I was saying those three different value systems, you're taking bits from each one. That's that kind of picture it. It doesn't make sense to take puzzle pieces from different boxes and try and make a picture with it when it's not an identical puzzle. There's three completely different pictures, three completely different ways of that puzzle, those puzzles going together. So those puzzle pieces you're going to try and fit together, but it's not going to make this big picture, and it's not going to look as a complete image in front of you. So try and think of it like that. So quick story about this one. Early on with my own dog, I kept a notebook of ideas. Loosely, games, focus drills, position changes. Now this is with Maisie, so anyone that's listened previously has heard Maisie mentioned, and this is going back 10 years before I know what I know now. Anyone new listening, Maisie was my first dog as an adult. Getting her in my 20s, thought I knew what I needed to know. Far from it. Now I know what I know. Things would have been different if I'd have known it back then. So I'd try something with her for a few days, I'd get frustrated, and I'd switch to another thing. So once I'd committed to one pathway, so thinking about that puzzle piece thing, so I've rather than taking all the pieces from different puzzles and trying to fit them together, I took one puzzle, all the pieces from the same box, I committed to it and aligned with my values as well. So I'll go into a little story a bit later on about that too. And her temperament as well, kind of making sure that I'm allowing for knowing she was a rescue dog. We took her on when she was an adult. She was like 4.5, 5-ish when we took her on. Her background was up and down. She'd had quite a nice previous 12 months living in a foster home with a lovely couple who loved her so much they overfed her, so she was quite chubby when we took her on, but she was happy with them. But prior to that, it was very up and down. So we started to see some progress in small, steady ways once we committed to that one thing that aligned with what my values were. Like I say, I'll go into a bit more on that one. So I just want to touch on the hidden cost of advice overload, because it does cost something. If we are trying to take on and absorb all this information from YouTube, from Instagram, from TikTok, all the things, there is going to be some fallout from that. So I'll go through a few of those, and then we'll go into what my filter is so that we can drown out the noise and cut through the noise with it. So the first thing is decision fatigue. So imagine your mind as an internet browser and you've got all the tabs open. You've got 20, 25 tabs open, and that is your brain. Every single one of those tabs is a behaviour, that like a tip or a trick or something you've seen on YouTube. And you can just start to see how you have all those different approaches, and you're trying all the different things, and the constant choice that you're trying to make with all of those tabs is going to start to lower your patience and consistency as a result. So your shift from one tab to another is a decision that you're making. As humans, we make millions of decisions a day, and I can't remember the exact number. I did hear it from somebody previously. If anybody knows, please DM me and let me know. But we make millions of decisions every single day, and we're adding to it by trying to implement all these different things. So if we start to close all those tabs and just stick with one, you can see how that's going to be so much more helpful, so much more easy, so much more kind of simple to implement for you and for your dog. Because that decision fatigue and the shifting from tab to tab to tab is going to create inconsistency for your dog. So the cues are going to change, the criteria is going to change, the rules are going to be shifting between walks, and that could even be from person to person. So thinking about the people that are in your home, are walking your dog, it might be that you've got a dog walker, so they do things differently to you potentially. So the rules are shifting from walk to walk to walk. Your dog's not going to be able to predict what earns them success, so the confidence starts to drop and then frustration starts to rise. So that decision fatigue leads to inconsistencies. And even if it's just like one thing that you do differently, but your dog's just never going to grasp it, because one person's asking you to do this thing and another person's asking you to do that thing, which one is it? So wait and stay is a good example of this one. So some people say wait in one situation where they want their dog to wait until they hear come here now. So the dog is about to move. So it could be wait and have your meal, for example. So here's your bowl. Wait before we cross the road, that kind of stuff. Wait before we leave the door. And another person might say stay for the same thing. It's a really common thing, that's why I'm mentioning it. So just think about the confusion for your dog. So stay for someone else might mean stay on that spot until I come back to you. So it could be stay there and I'm going out the front door to the bin and you're staying where you are because you can't come out with me. We're not going anywhere. And if somebody's saying wait and stay and it's all getting confused, your dog's never going to learn because there's inconsistencies. And our dogs are so pattern driven that they won't learn because there is no clear pattern for them to pick up. So again, think about it in a human way as well. If somebody asked you to do something and the goalpost shifted the next time you did it, you'd be like, well, this is how we did it last time. Why has it changed? And you might not know why. Your dog doesn't know why. So try and think a bit how confusing that can be, because it will create confusion for your dog and then they won't know what to do. That then leads to a shift in your state. So you're going to brace for failure because it's happened before. Your body gets tense, so you start to feel dysregulated, and your dog's going to read that, and regulation then gets harder for you both, because each time you try and go into these training sessions, you're going to feel more dysregulated. It's your body's natural reaction in that situation to not feel like you can do all of this and you're positive and all of that thing. You're going to be feeling negatively around that. So your state starts to shift and then your dog's picking up on it and feeling the same way. That then leads to the spiral. It's just the spiral. Overwhelm leads to stop-start training, because you start to kind of implement something, you feel overwhelmed, you start feeling frustrated, you stop doing it. You might not do anything for again, so you stop the next day or the day after, and then it starts again, stop-start training. That leads to poor results because there is no consistency, and then poor results is going to feed the overwhelm. So you can see, even just me talking it through, the decision fatigue leads to inconsistencies, leads to a shift in state, which leads to the spiral, and then you start again. You shift to another tab and another. So even just talking about it, starting to send it me kind of like talking really quickly, you can see how you can spiral with that one. So you and your dog deserve something so much kinder than that. And it's something that you might have created yourself, because that's just how the world has created things. There is so much advice out there. We start to get it all feeding into us, and we start to hear all of those things over everything that we're telling ourselves, that our body's telling us, and that our dogs are telling us. So because of all that stuff and the spiral that we get stuck into, I want to give you a simple filter that is going to cut through all of that noise, and it will help you so, so much. So it's a four-step filter, really simple again, and I want you to use it with any piece of advice. So this could actually be in your life as well, with your dog, outside of your dog, if it's things that you want to work on implementing for what you're eating or whatever it is. If it's diet stuff, like people are telling you to try this thing and you go on this diet and all that stuff, like whatever it is, implement this filter and it will help. But in this context, we're using it for obviously for dog training. If it passes, keep it. If not, let it go for now. So I do say for now. It could be let it go completely because you've realised from the filters it's just never going to be something that you will do. And I'll go into a bit more detail about my story with Maisie, because that fits very nicely into this section. But it might be for now, because it may be from this this filter that actually right now it's not going to work. So right now, we our time of recording, it's the school summer holidays. So time is going to play a big part in this. Everyone's busy. They've got their kids to kind of look after. Day trips, holidays, lots of stuff that's taking them out of their normal routine. Therefore, you might say, if it's that situation is there happening with you right now, you might say, well, time's an issue for me currently, so I'm going to park this particular thing. It's passed every other filter, but that filter, it's not working for me time-wise, so I'm just going to park it. I'm going to bookmark it and come back to it when I have more time. So kids go back to school in September. Let's revisit it once we've got back and settled into our routine again. Absolutely fine, no problem at all with that. So we'll go through what that filter is. Touched on a little bit of it, but that's a little bit later. So the first filter I want you to think about is your values filter. So I want you to think about and ask yourself these questions. Does this tip align with kindness, with consent from your dog, and emotional safety for both you and your dog? So if it clashes with your ethics, it's a no. So the story that I have around this is about Maisie. And it involves a values thing. And I've worked with clients who have previously had trainers in and they've gone through the same kind of thing. So going back all those years with Maisie when we first bought her home, I wanted to work on some stuff with her to go to training. So we went to some training classes, we started going, and I didn't know then what I know now. And she used to bark when she felt stressed. So even before we'd bought a home, bless her, she was barking at the glass window in the rescue centre. So when we saw her at the Dog's Trust, she was so stressed out barking at this glass. And I felt so sorry for her. And she was such a lovely dog when we got her out of that situation and out on a walk. She was brilliant. That's why we bought her home. But I digress. She was a barker. So in this situation in the class, it was a very big group situation. There were multiple levels that everybody was working at. So we were in our like little silos and it was outside. And we went there for a few sessions and it was fine up until the point where Maisie was getting stressed out because we were in super close proximity during this one particular exercise. And I could tell she was getting stressed out. She wasn't ever reacting out of fear. She used to have dog friends and she used to like being around other dogs, but she had conflicting emotions. So she was like, I like you, but I don't know how to deal with this. So I'm just going to bark because I'm getting stressed. That she was never aggressive with anyone. It was never anything like that. It was just her mechanism of saying, I feel like I'm confused. I'm a bit stressed. I don't know what to do. And the trainer noticed that she was barking and she was the only one barking, so it kind of makes you feel more embarrassed and it feels like everyone's looking at you and judging you and all the things, or you can't control your dog and whatever. And that's how I felt. So the trainer came over and gave me a bottle of water and she said, every time she barks, spray her in the face with the water. And going back to the values filter, I wasn't super comfortable with this. I didn't really want to do it, but I felt a little bit of peer pressure because I was in this big group situation. And the group that I was in, I'd kind of been... she was kind of saying it in front of everyone rather than taking me to one side and having a chat through and all the things. It was just like, do this. So pressure, embarrassment, being singled out, lots of emotion going on for me, but I didn't feel super comfortable doing it. But because of all those things that I've just said, I felt I had to do it. So I didn't listen to my gut instinct on it. And I did it once. And just before I did it, I remember I said, I'm so sorry, and I sprayed her in the face with the water bottle. Now, the fact that I said I'm sorry tells me a lot because I clearly didn't feel comfortable and I said I'm sorry. Now I do not want to have to do something and say sorry before I do it. I never give clients anything to do that means they have to apologize to their dog for doing it or makes their dog feel uncomfortable or causes pain or whatever it is, like a fear of the water in that scenario. I'm not going to create that fear of water for a dog by saying spray them in the face when they do something. She's still feeling that stress and anxiety in that situation. I'm just trying to stop it happening. I'm trying to stop the behaviour happening with spraying her in the face with the water. And it's just either going to do one of two things. It'll either, and this is where the conflicting advice works for one dog versus another. I've heard it from clients with the water bottle scenario. You spray them in the face with the water and they start to distrust you, not enjoy being near you because their relationship with you has been kind of damaged. And therefore, they start to also get a fear of water, and it makes the situation that has triggered that barking or biting, whatever it is, to be more of an emotional trigger for your dog. So they start to feel more of that fear because they're having something happen to them that they don't like. So that situation starts to become more stressful. That happens, or the alternative is they absolutely love it. They really want the water to be sprayed at them. They think it's an amazing game and it makes the behaviour stronger. So it makes them do it more because they want the thing to happen. They've learnt that when they bark, they get the water and it's great and I love it. So one of two things. It doesn't stop the emotion, doesn't change the emotion, doesn't do anything except stop them from doing the thing if it starts to create fear or make them do it more because they think it's fun. So that's where the value filter is really important. And I've gone into detail about it and told you a story because I really want you to think about that. And with the Maisie story, I sprayed in her face with the water once. I said, I'm really sorry. She looked at me with such a depressed look in her face. She was like, she kind of like did this little thing with her face when I did it because she was like shocked by it. She looked at me really sad and I said, I'm so sorry, I'm never ever ever going to do that to you ever again. Told the trainer, can't do this, don't want to do this, gave her the bottle back, and I never turned up to any more classes after that because I felt really uncomfortable doing the thing that she said I should do in that situation. There was no conversation, there was nothing, it was just spray me in the face with this and that was it. So my values there, even then, not knowing what I know now, I felt uncomfortable. So I was said, I promise I'll never do that to you ever again. And I didn't. And I have never done it to any of my dogs. None of them have been super fans of water. So it's not something that I'm going to go out and do. So that's filter one, your values filter. And don't ever feel, if I was put in that situation again, I would say, no, absolutely not. I'm not doing that and I'm going to leave. I'm not comfortable doing this, I'm leaving. If that is the only solution that you have that will help me with her barking in this situation, it's not going to work. Don't feel like you're being rude or anything like that. Just stick up for your values in that situation and it will make you feel so much better. So then we move on to the sustainability filter. So this just basically means, is this thing that you want to work on sustainable for your dog, their temperament, their health, their current skill level? So somebody working on this tip or whatever with their adult dog, and you've got a puppy, we want to try and make sure that we're matching their skill level with this. If they've never learned anything before and we're working with things from scratch, we have to try and match our dog's levels where they're at. So for example, if your dog startles easily, you're going to likely need more distance, more decompression, and slower criteria than for a confident social butterfly. So that's an example of how that can be helpful. So think about it from a sustainability, what is your dog like? You know your dog best. So think of it like that. Will this thing help my dog with, based on the individual dog that is in front of me that I know really well? Third one is feasibility filter. Can you realistically do this in your real life this week? So you're thinking about time. How much time have you got? So I've mentioned the school holidays. How much time do you have right now to do this? The environment, the equipment, and the energy, they all matter, because if whatever you're working on is asking for an hour in a field and you've got a city pavement and 20 minutes, it's potentially not going to have the same effect and it's not going to work in the same way. Now, I would never say spend an hour drilling something with your dog anyway. We break it into smaller sections and smaller chunks and that's how they learn more effectively. But that's just an example of some videos would expect stuff like that. And again, I'm trying to use more extreme versions of things so that you can see the differences. And then the final thing is the consistency window. So can you commit to one clear approach for at least 14 days? So that real change needs repetition. I've said dogs are pattern driven and they need that consistency. So if you can't give it 2 weeks, scale the plan until you can. So try and make it so that it becomes more easy for you to be consistent. So when a tip passes all four of those, so it's not just one of those things, it has to pass all four of those things, it belongs in your plan because you know that it's going to be possible and it meets all your values and all the things. Everything else is going to go into a maybe later box or maybe later where it isn't going to distract you. So you can, if it doesn't pass a filter that isn't going to impact your dog's relationship with you or your ethics, and it is just a time thing, just bookmark it and come back to it and go back through this filter again with that point. So it's really good and easy to rinse and repeat. So then I want to move on after we've kind of understood the filter and write it down and kind of say, right, I'm going to use this. I'm going to go through the tips that I've got. I'm not going to go find more. I'm going to just look at the tips that I've got and I'm going to go through this filter and try to make it so that you're working on the things that are doable for you right now. I want you to then go through the Focus 5 plan. So this is where we start to turn the filter into a plan so that you can use it this week. So once you've filtered through and you said, right, these are the things that I can do right now, we want to do, so maybe you've got a list of 4 or 5 that you think are possible and doable right now. We want to choose one goal, one cue, one context, one metric, and one review day. So that's the Focus 5 plan that I like to use. So that one goal is choosing a single outcome for the next 2 weeks. So you could find, like, for example, calmer door greetings, if that's an issue for your dog and you've picked that as through the filter, you've said, right, this is a tip to help with calmer door greetings. I can do that. It's doable. It's ethical. It's I haven't got to spend loads of time doing it. I've seen the video work X, Y, Z, whatever it is. So all that filter you've ticked and said, yeah, I can do that. So it could be steady a loose lead for the first 5 minutes of a walk. It could be faster recovery after barking. So pick that one goal that you want to kind of take forward. Then choose one cue. So decide what cue or routine is going to support the goal. So for door greetings, that might be go to a mat because that might be the thing that you've seen. So we've said, right, this is the video. It's telling us that we need to teach our dog the alternative to going and being really excited and barking at the door and jumping up at visitors is teaching them to go to their bed. That's a really nice alternative behaviour that we can implement and work on step by step. For loose lead, it might be a slow start routine with 3 steps and feed. So we're thinking about the goal, which is for the first 5 minutes of a walk, we want steady a loose lead walking. Now, when we say first 5 minutes, that might be a push. We might actually have to flip it and say, we want to work on this when we're coming home. So initially your dog's super excited, but on their way home, it might be a lot easier to implement. So again, picking this up based on your dog and your situation. But you might find that, okay, let's just do 3 steps and reward, and that's where the loose lead is happening, in those 3 steps. And the reward could be a piece of food, or it could be a sniff at the sniffy spot that they really want to get to. So again, we're mixing up based on our individual dog here, but we're only choosing one thing here, so these are just examples that you can choose from. Then we're going to choose one context. So we're going to train that thing in one specific setting before anywhere else. So going back to the examples I've used for door greetings, we're going to practice with a known helper before you try real visitors. So it might even be you don't use anybody and you start to teach them to go to their bed and you press. So if you've got a ring doorbell or a doorbell sound on your phone, you make that sound on your phone and you go to the door and there's no one there. That could be a brilliant starting point here, and that is all you do for the calm greetings as your starting point. For loose lead, again, going back to the examples I've used, you're going to choose the same quiet street at a quiet time. So we do it on the same road at the same time each day when we know that it's quiet. Then one metric just means a simple measure that you can spot progress with. So it's just something that's easy to spot when progress is being made. So that could be, for the bed example, seconds to settle on the mat. So how long it's taking, how long they're settling on the mat for, how many seconds, literally counting in seconds, not minutes or hours. We are saying, right, they started off by only settling on the mat for a second, but now it's seven. That's progress. So we're starting to make progress there. And then it goes up to 20. But then it might go back. They might go back to 10 and you think, oh my God, what's happening? But if you're consistent and keep persevering, it jumps up again. So we start to then get 30 seconds. You're like, oh my gosh, I've been able to get 30 seconds of a settle on their mat. And they've never ever done that before. For the loose lead walking example, it could be how many steps you are taking before there's tension on the lead. So thinking and counting in your head or out loud, how many steps you're taking. It can help if you count out loud, your dog's attention and engagement can increase on you because they can hear you saying stuff. And it's just 1, 2, 3, 4. So you know, like, I initially was only taking 5 steps before there was tension. Now we've got up to 7. Then it's gone up to 12. And then they've gone back to 10 again. Why did they do that? Just not sure, but let's make it a bit easier and let's go, oh, now they've gone up to 15. Amazing. So they've gone from 3 to 15 because you've practiced that one thing in the same context, the same spot, the same cue on repeat. And then one review day. So put a date in the diary. So at the end of week one, so try to make it after like 7 days, ask yourself what improved, what felt sticky, and what you'll repeat next week. So just keep it really short and keep it really kind. So just a couple of minutes just to do that. And I've said to kind of keep little trackers of daily things as well. So just to go over that again with one example here, and this is the loose lead. So the goal, so that first one is the goal. It's a calmer first 5 minutes. So I'll use that as the example. The cue would be to say with me and 3 slow steps and feed. So you don't necessarily have to say anything for your dog to come back to a loose lead. So it's not coming and sticking to your leg here. It can be, you want that nice slack lead. So it's, they could just be ahead of you, but they're nice and relaxed. And you count 1, 2, 3. Great. The context would be the same pavement loop at 7 a.m. So you're doing the same thing in the same place at the same time. The metric, so the thing that we're measuring, is the number of calm check-ins or the number of steps before that first lead tighten. So we can measure it really easily, how many steps this time. And the review, we're going to do it every Sunday. We can decide whether we're going to add more steps or keep it the same based on the progress we've made this week. So this is how you start to cut through the noise, because you decide what matters. You practice it in the same way, in the same place, with the same expectations, until your dog starts to say, I know this game. And I say that a lot. So I know what I'm doing. Great. I know this. And they start to do it much quicker each time. So I really want you to kind of go through that Focus 5 plan and start to implement it with all the things that you've put through that filter. So I just want to touch on those invisible wins and how to spot them, because sometimes the metric bit can be a bit of a toughie. So a lot of people think that nothing's changing when in fact the wins are really just simply really small. The dog's recovery time for barking, I've mentioned that before, might be shorter. The first pull happens later on in the walk. Your dog glances at you more often. So those check-ins are really important if you're not spotting them, because you're in your own little world. And I've mentioned that in a previous episode. It's going to be difficult. They're not small things. These are the stepping stones that start to lead to the change that you actually want to see. So just using a tiny tracker. So I've mentioned kind of keeping a daily tracker before. Just for 2 minutes at the end of the day, write down what we practiced, where we practiced, that one metric number, so how many, like if it's loose lead, how many steps were on that particular session, and one sentence about how it felt. You are guaranteed to start spotting patterns, because that's just how it goes. If you focus in on those things, you'll start to see patterns. That is going to mean that you're more motivated. That motivation keeps you consistent, and the consistency is what creates results. So this isn't about the drill sergeant. It's not about being consistent in a way that's unfeasible, undoable, like undoable, that's not a word, but you know what I mean, that's not doable. It's just starting to build those stepping stones, and you start to celebrate a bit more, and you start to say, oh, you know, we're doing it, we're getting there. And you do that with all the things that you're implementing. So a little snapshot from a client that I want to mention here, just to kind of drill it home how this can really help change things. So a puppy parent told me that their puppy was not settling at all and would never settle. Every evening felt like real chaos for them, and so we just started to track progress over a 2-week period. At first, her puppy stayed on the mat for like 10-20 seconds max. Now, 20 seconds is a long time, so initially it was probably shorter than that, maybe like 10 seconds, and then they'd get up again. But by the end of that 2 weeks, it started to become a minute and a half, 2 minutes of the settle. Now, bear in mind, it was, you know, the context in the situation that she was practicing in and all that kind of stuff may have been more of a distracting place. So it could be at the pub, you know, that kind of thing. So there are going to be more things happening. But going from 10 seconds and it being really inconsistent, practicing one thing over a period of 2 weeks, and then her dog being able to settle in a more distracting place for a minute and a half, 2 minutes, is really awesome, because then that 2 minutes goes up to 10 minutes, goes up to 20 minutes, goes up to half an hour, goes up to the amount of time it takes for you to finish your meal at the pub or drink. So that confidence meant that she started to say, well, I'm going to keep going with this, and the bigger changes started to happen. So it was little things. She was saying, right, they are settling more than I expected, more than I thought, so I'm going to keep going. So I'm going to give you a challenge. So we've got the filter, we've got the Focus 5 plan. So I want you to focus on the next 7 days doing all of this. So the first thing is to choose that single goal and write down your Focus 5 for that one goal. For day 2, I want you to practice for 5 minutes, 2 to 3 times a day, and just stop when it feels easy. So don't try and push it and challenge your dog in this situation. Just practice for 5 minutes, 2 to 3 times a day, and stop when that's done, and stop when it's still, you're still winning. Day 3, I just want you to repeat day 2 and note down a micro win. So one of those small things that you've seen from your little tracker at the end of day 2. Day 4, I want you to take a decompression day. I want it to be like sniff walks and play and no pressure, just so that you are getting a break. Because again, we don't want to make this overwhelming. We want it to be something that you can do. So day 4 is about decompression, but still getting all the things that we need for our dog to feel fulfilled. I want you to then, day 5, practice again, 5 minutes, 2 to 3 times a day for that same single goal, the Focus 5 plan, for that one thing that you want to work on. For day 6, I want you to repeat and note down a micro win again. So repeat day 5 and write down a win. And then for day 7, I want you to just review your notes, decide if you repeat the same plan next week. So that's that second week. Do we do the same again, or do we add another step? So this is where you start to be able to implement all the things. So I really want you to kind of note that down, make it really easy for yourself, take that decompression day on day 4 so that it doesn't start to feel overwhelming. And if you want to share your Focus 5 with me on Instagram, I'd love to see it, just so that you can kind of, if you want to, me to kind of look it over and double check it and just say, that I think looks brilliant, let's give it a go, I'd love to cheer you on. I really want you to be able to progress with something that you maybe felt you were sticking on before. So I just want everything, I want you to know, everything that we're doing here is going to lead you to that Calm Connection Challenge at the end of September that I've touched on and mentioned and teased. So over 4 days, we are going to be working together on building the foundations that make training plans more effective. So it's going to be about your state, your dog's state, simple routines that reduce pressure and helps you to grow in confidence. So if you've been feeling like really scattered by advice overload because it just doesn't stop, the challenge is going to feel like a real breath of fresh air. And I'll put all the details in the show notes along with your 7-day plan so you can copy and paste it, and what those focus 5 things are and what the filters are. So you'll see all those things in the show notes and you can just go copy them. And you'll see what the challenge, a bit more about the challenge, and you can sign up to it in anticipation for the end of September. So I'm just going to sign off now because I want you to know dog training doesn't need more noise. We don't need to add more to our list. We need to have a kinder focus. I want you to choose one path that matches your values. I want you to practice it in a way that suits your life. And I want you, really want you to track the small wins and just give it time. Have confidence that it's going to work. I don't want you to feel like you're behind, because you're not. You are building something steady with the dog that you love. And just like I did with Maisie, we got there eventually because we chose that one puzzle and worked on it. So I really want to thank you for listening to the Mindful Dog Parent podcast today and any other episodes that you've listened to. If you want to or haven't already, I'd love it if you followed and subscribed so that you never miss an episode. And if this has helped you, I'd love it if you shared it with a friend or a family member or someone that you care about who you think might be drowning in dog training advice. They might not have told you that, but it may be that they've got a new puppy, a new rescue dog, they're trying to watch all the videos, and you can just kind of sense there's a bit of that. So share it with them, let them build that plan, and I shall see you next time. Thanks so much for tuning in to the Mindful Dog Parent. If this episode gave you something to think about, or it just made you feel a little less alone, I would love it if you followed the show and shared it with another dog parent who needs it. You'll find all the links and resources mentioned in the show notes at lavendergardenanimalservices.co.uk/podcast. And I would love to stay in touch, so head there if you want to explore more ways to work with me or get support.